Ready? Welcome everyone to your first committee on rules for the interim. We're delighted that it's the interim, aren't we, Senator Nelson? I did want to welcome a couple of new committee members. Senator Betsy Johnson, welcome.
Thank you.
Hope you enjoy this tour of duty. Senator Nelson, I think you've been on rules before. No? Okay. Well, welcome. Welcome, and Senator Bates couldn't join us today, and Senator Farioli will be joining us shortly, but Senator Farioli is a, veteran member, perfectly seasoned member of the committee. You should have in front of you the proposed committee rules. The only changes, I believe, though the committee council might check me, is the fact that the last time we were in interim committee, we were in a tie chamber, and so we got rid of the co-chair language. But other than that, I believe they're
generic. Yes.
So,
Madam Chair, I would move adoption of the rules.
Senator Johnson has moved adoption of the proposed committee rules dated October 2005. Any discussion? Would you please call the roll, James?
Senator Bates?
Aye.
Senator Nelson?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Crayle? Aye.
Chair Brown?
Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Thank you all very much. For the members in the audience, I know a number of you need to get back to work, so we're going to move through you as quickly as possible. We've invited you down to be part of a conversation about we want to make sure that legislators know who are serving on our boards and commissions. And as we did this through the session, we just found it a pretty interesting experience to meet the breadth and depth of experience that Oregonians have, and they're willing to give the state of Oregon. So we really appreciate you coming forward this afternoon and your willingness to serve on these boards and commissions. Once we get through the folks in the audience, then we'll move to telephone testimony. So we'll try to get through all of you as quickly as possible. We're going to start off with Dr. Bruce Goldberg. Why don't you come on up, Dr. Goldberg, and I'm going to open a public hearing and work session on the Director of the Department of Human Services. And welcome, Dr. Goldberg. And if you'd tell us a little bit about yourself and why on earth you want this job.
I would be happy to. Chair Brown, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bruce Goldberg, and I am honored to be here today to be considered for the Director of the Department of Human Services. I think, as all of you know, I've dedicated my career to helping people and improving the way that we deliver, organize, and pay for health and human services. And this position is probably the most meaningful and important way to continue that work. My experiences have provided me with the knowledge and background, I think, and I hope to successfully lead DHS through the lives of the patients I cared for, most of whom relied on the services that DHS provides. I have direct knowledge of the importance and impact DHS has on the lives of the citizens of Oregon. Through my professional activities, I've gained the experience to manage an organization and appreciation of the need to establish effective and functional partnerships with community organizations and business partners. And through my 2.5 years with the legislature over the last few years, I've come to appreciate the need for DHS to have an effective working relationship with the legislature, with the governor's office, and with the other state agencies. I think all of you know the vital role that DHS plays in the lives of the citizens of the state and the huge scope of the organization. And probably nothing represents the mixture of both scope, services, and importance than the conversations I've had with each of you over the last few weeks, as well as with many other people. Senator Brown, you and I talked about the need for children's services and the importance of keeping children safe and secure. Senator Farioli, you talked with me about the need for professionalism and the importance of service delivery in local communities. Senator Bates is not here. We have an ongoing conversation about the need for assuring that everyone in the state have basic health care. Senator Nelson and I talked about the importance of senior services and about the issues in rural communities and their unique needs. And Senator Johnson, Well, Senator Johnson, most bluntly, eloquently, and forcefully impressed upon me the need for accountability in what we do, both programmatically and financially. And indeed, that's a theme that I've heard from a lot of people, both legislators and others. And from within the organization, I've heard a concern about the changing in leadership and the turnover and subsequent moral issues. So my hope is that I'll provide effective and stable leadership for DHS and help have DHS be known as an organization that provides exceptional service, that's accountable for and able to measure what it does and how it does it. That is an organization that continually improves as it strives for excellence, and is an organization in which the people who work there are proud to be a part of it, and that the state's proud to have DHS working for it. And I think together I'm hopeful that we can achieve that and make Oregon a healthier and a safer place. So thank you.
Great. Thank you. Could you talk specifically about what you saw as your background in terms of management experience? And then also, we also talked about diversifying leadership within the agency and sort of what role you play in moving forward on that.
Chair Brown, members of the committee, in terms of management experience, I worked for 5.5 years with the Public Health Service, and in that helped run and manage a Public Health Service hospital outpatient clinic, and what was in essence an organization that took care for and was responsible for the health and social services for 20,000 Native Americans who lived in southwest New Mexico. I was part of the senior management team responsible for budget leadership and the execution of health and human services programs in the organization. Coming to Oregon, I've helped administer a department in an academic health center, was vice chair of the Department of Family Medicine, worked as the medical director at CARE Oregon, and through that provided leadership and management for what's now become the largest Medicaid managed care organization in the state. In terms of your second question, which was about diversity, I expressed to you, and I'll express to everybody on the committee, that I think that having a diversity of leadership, both in terms of gender, culture, and geography, is really important. That the organization represents the breadth of individuals in the state, and that having an organization that has diversity in leadership, that promotes diversity, that has diversity as part of culture, is important. Not just in terms of the human resources and personnel issues. It's not just about having a diverse staff, but it's also about having a staff that understands the diverse needs of the state.
Thank you. Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Some time ago, the agency went through what was perceived by some to be a wrenching reorganization. And I can only just draw on the experience of the district that I serve, which is geographically big, not big like some people's, is geographically expansive. But I have managers in the Children's Services that are trying to manage three counties and spending enormous amounts of time in cars, in places where the cell phone doesn't work. I'm not asking you to lay out a reorg now, but asking really how amenable you would be to looking at some of those rather recent reorganizations to see if they're working. I know that under previous directors there were sweeping changes, and I'm just trying to get a sense. I'm also trying to get a sense, if your answer is that you would be willing to look at those, how much the guys at the front counter that are actually delivering the services would be consulting to see what's efficacious in terms of actual delivery.
Chair Brown, Senator Johnson, first, I would be amenable. There's several issues. First, you're right. The department did go through a wrenching reorganization. Having said that, I don't think I could look at you honestly, and or any of us could look at each other and say, that's been such a smashing success that we don't need any more change and everything's just hunky-dory. By the same token, huge and massive and continuous reorganizations where the pendulum swings from one side to the next can be dizzying for people. I think we've got to be smart about, I don't think it's about reorganization, it's about how we organize ourselves to deliver services. And that's both at the macro level in the organization, but it's also at the local and the county level and the service delivery level. And I think we have to involve the people who deliver the services as well as the people who receive them. In addition to that, it's a huge organization, and I don't in any way come before you with the illusion that I understand every program and every aspect of that. Because of that, I've got to, and we all have to rely on the expertise that exists within the programs, within the staff at the local level, and with what we hear from the people to whom we deliver those. So I'm very amenable to that.
Thank you. Just a follow-up, Madam Chair.
Senator Johnson.
I was particularly pleased to hear you say county, because we have shared constituencies, and I think that there has been, over the course of the last couple of sessions, kind of a wall built between county services that are doing your work and state services or state money that's providing the money. And just to hear you acknowledge reaching out at the county level, to me, is comforting.
Chair Brown, Senator Johnson, a quick comment. I think, as you know, my introduction to county government in Oregon was when you asked that I become a health officer for Columbia County. And I came to understand, I've worked at the county level at Columbia County, in Clackamas County, in the health department there, and I understand the relationship between counties and the state and the import that it's a two-way street, and we've got to make that an effective road.
We were drowning at the time. I was not in the legislature, and in a desperate search for help, reached out to OHSU. Our hospital had just failed. They referred me to Dr. Goldberg, and with almost no hesitation, after I laid out the plight of Columbia County, he came out and helped us through a very difficult time.
Great. Thank you. Senator Nelson.
Yes, just a couple of things. Thank you, Doctor. Thank you for offering to serve. Appreciate that. A couple of things that I can think of, and I think you're going to have to address as Director of the Venture approved, is in the last couple of sessions, we've always felt that there's been misinformation coming in from your office into our budget process, and all of a sudden we find we're $40, $50, $60 million. And so there's a lack of trust, I think, between the agency and the legislature at this particular time. And I understand that caseloads move around, and so you have some issues there. So just to indicate to you that I know that that is going to be an issue. The other thing is that when I talk to the people at the community level, caseloads, our workers out there are just inundated. They really can't do any job. And it's important for us, when they call, when we have a constituent call up and say, well, you know, I've got this real issue, that we have access to your agency. And usually, they usually are very good. I have to give you the agency a lot of compliments there because they take care of a lot of problems. But to me, those are the two big things, is, you know, how you get along with the legislature, and two, how do we make sure our constituents are taken care of.
Chair Brown, Senator Nelson, I think the two of those really fit hand in hand. I think that the issue of being certain that we take care of our constituents is really related to the issue of fiscal accountability and the accountability for what we do. I hear what you're saying about the issues of fiscal accountability and of trust and of honesty. I hear it. I lived through it the last couple of years. I'm well aware of it. And I see it as the largest challenge that I face. Not that it's a challenge for me to be honest. I will be honest and forthright, but I think being certain that we are fiscally accountable and create the foundation to build a healthy organization on is what we need. I pledge to you to be honest and forthright. I don't know that I can pledge which side of the ledger the numbers are going to be at, but I can certainly pledge that I'll be open, forthright, and work my hardest to be certain that we're doing the right thing.
Thank you. Other questions? Sir Ferriello.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Two things. First of all, it's a pleasure to see Dr. Goldberg here. We've had a series of conversations, and I very much appreciate the fact that you've involved apparently all of the members, and I think that speaks very well of the potential. It's nice to have a person who's clearly qualified to do this job, actually want to do this job. It's just an amazing coincidence of our need and your ambition, so that's a good thing. The concern I have is that you get the adequate support of the administration. You and I had a discussion about that. I appreciate your candor. I hope you appreciated mine. I see that the job description's been lightly modified to indicate that with the prior consent of the governor, you would have broad latitude within the agency to accomplish the kind of corporate culture changes that have not resulted from the reorganization. And frankly, I think the agency now suffers from reorganitis. You know, we've scrambled that egg so many times it's not recognizable as an omelet anymore. We can't do it anymore. I think that what I hope you find within the agency is a whole group of people in the middle management and at the offices that are eager to have clear direction and stability. Madam Chair, to that regard, Dr. Goldberg and I did a brief, quick overview of the recent past history of directors. Gary Weeks had a career, and Mr. Mink had a career, and Ms. Thorne had a career, and then we got Weeks again, and then we had Brian Johnson for a couple of weeks.
Oh, 7 months, Senator.
Yeah, it was Weeks. And so I think that Mr. Goldberg's staff did a risk analysis and determined that from that curve he could expect a career of about 3 weeks with the department. I hope what you will do is make this present in future tense, and that your tenure with the agency gives it stability. I think that's what it badly and desperately needs. So I don't really have a question to make to this applicant, Madam Chair. I just wanted to appreciate him for the outreach that he's already done, encourage him in that way, and just to make sure that he is getting assurances from this administration, from the executive, from the chief executive, that it will not be a long-distance relationship that he has with the chief executive. If he'll get the support he needs to do what he needs to do in the agency. Have you got those
assurances? I have those assurances, and I look to have the same assurances from the legislature as well. We're all in this together, that we can move forward, all of us.
Senator Ferriello, anything else?
No.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anybody else wishing to testify on the appointment of Dr. Bruce Goldberg to the Department of Human Services? Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing, open a work session.
Madam Chair, I'll move the appointment if no one else does.
Senator Ferrioli has moved the appointment of Bruce Goldberg as Director of Department of Human Services. Any discussion? Would you please call the roll?
Senator Bates. Senator Johnson.
Aye.
Senator Nelson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Ferrioli.
Aye.
Chair Brown.
Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Who would like to carry? Senator Johnson, would you like to carry this appointment?
I would be honored to.
Okay. All right, let's move to public hearing on State Apprenticeship and Training Council. We've got Mr. Robert Rogers and Mr. John Rosell. Come on forward. Next up to bat, we have the Electrical and Elevator Board, Doug Algett. And then in the hole, we've got the Commission on Asian Affairs, folks. Good afternoon and welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Please proceed. Why don't you give us your names, tell us a little bit about yourself, and tell us why you want to serve on the State Apprenticeship and Training Council Board.
Well, I'll go first. My name is John Rosell. I am a contractor, actually. I own a company in Beaverton, Oregon. We do HVAC design build work. So I have I employ plumbers and fitters and electricians and sheet metal workers. And most of our employees have gone through some sort of training program like this. So the viability of these programs are, in my opinion, crucial to the viability of my company and also to the industry as a whole. I went through the same kind of program, and that started my career. So I'm intimately involved with these programs for about as long as I can remember.
Yes, Madam Chair. My name is Robert Rogers. I'm a retired individual at this particular time. I do consulting work for Local 290 Plumbers and Steam Fitters. I retired from the State Apprenticeship and Training Division after 21 years. I have worked in apprenticeship for over 40 years and for the State of Oregon and different classifications and that. So I was asked to come back for some leadership and experience on the council, and I wanted to come back because I have a desire to see the young people of this state be trained the right way and have opportunity to do the things that they would desire to do, and that's become productive citizens for the state of Oregon and be able to buy homes, be able to send their kids to college and those type of things. That's why I'm here. If I have the interests of the young people of this state at heart.
Thank you. Mr. Sims, do you wish to testify?
No, thank you, Madam Chair. Just for the record, Steve Sims, the administrator of the State Apprenticeship Council.
Thank you. My question for both of you is, I know the trades have had a really hard time attracting women to the professions. Any thoughts on how we can get more women interested in trades?
In order to get more women into the trades is that the programs, we have enough laws and rules on the books now. I would say that if the lawmakers and those that's in charge can enforce the laws that's already on the book, we don't need any new ones. Also, our economy plays a great role. And we have to look at starting from grade K on up. We have to let women know that apprenticeship is willing to accept them into the trades, but it's going to start into the school system. They have to know in the school system that they can become carpenters, they become electricians, they become plumbers. But it's going to be from the school system. It's not going to be any laws that's going to come from the office here, but it's going to be the school system to educate and really treat women the way that they should be treated, and not that they have opportunity to be whatever they want to be.
Thank you. Any other thoughts?
Madam Chair, I'd just like to add to that I think the problem is even broader than that. I think the trades have a hard time attracting and showing what kind of opportunities are available to young people in general. Women actually represent a great opportunity for the trades because if we can get the word out of what kind of opportunities are in the various trades, you know, both financially and educationally and everything else, then they represent an area where we can expand our membership, and that's really what we're looking for.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to follow along with this line of conversation and actually make a plea to both of you, assuming that you're confirmed. You have the ability in your role as a part of this commission to be advocates and to have a bully pulpit. I've been very concerned in some of the discussions that have occurred in this building about the emphasis on four-year degrees and somehow the suggestion that if a young person doesn't pursue a four-year degree, that they have not achieved their full academic potential. And I'm hopeful that based on the comments that you both shared with Senator Brown with respect to attracting women, that you could take that a step further and make sure that in your role once confirmed that you'd be advocates for the trades, period. I think we have done a great deal to devalue being the best carpenter, the best electrician, and I'm hopeful that in your position that you would use that pulpit to say that kind of a career selection is a terrific career selection, an honorable career selection, and that everybody doesn't have to go on to pursue some four-year liberal arts degree to be productive members of the community.
Chairman Brown, Senator Johnson, that's my philosophy, is that I've used that for 40-some years, and the thing that I look at, first, let me say this here, because construction is not for everyone. I don't care who they are. I don't like construction, see, but I work in it, but I would not be a contractor in that. But the bottom line is that we have to let people know that they can become whatever they want to be and have the avenues open for them. I don't, like I say, I started out years ago, 40-some years ago, and my philosophy has always been the same. If I find a person that's interested, whatever trade is in, I will do my best to make sure that there be a success in it. I dedicate myself to young people. If it's a five-year program, I'm there for 5 years, not just to get them into the door, but to counsel them, to be a mentor to them, to be a sounding board to them. I'm there to help them to make sure that they be a success, because if they're not, it reflects on me, and I'm not going to have any failures in my house. So I'm saying that if they're there, I'm going to help them get through the program. But that's what it's going to take in the economy. If there's no economy, there's no work. So if we don't have economy, people are not going to be working. So we have to look at creating things beyond just construction. We have to look at all the avenues as a whole. We have to have all of the city and state and county government working together. There must be one common goal, is that we want to put Oregonians to work. Regardless if they're in the county, if they're in the city, if they're in little towns of Oregon, wherever they live at, we must have opportunities for those people to work.
Thank you.
Chair Brown, Senator Johnson, I agree with your comment, and I appreciate it. I think one thing that's happening that's kind of exciting along those lines are some programs now are making a compromise where young people can enroll in the program and achieve an associate degree. And so they don't need the four-year degree, and I agree with that, but some of the basic reading skills, writing skills, arithmetic, some of the basic things that would be necessary for them to expand on their career are being provided, and I think that's a very exciting development in apprenticeship programs.
I would agree with that completely, and I think absolutely people going into the trade should be equipped with those business tools that make them successful, reading and being able to understand a contract and all of those sorts of things. But I'm simply an advocate for saying, if someone makes a career choice to be a plumber or a contractor or a carpenter, that those are honorable, lucrative career choices where they can succeed, and that a measure of someone's academic prowess doesn't have to be a traditional four-year degree followed by a graduate program. You can be out making a very comfortable living, working in very honorable professions that don't necessarily require long-range academic credentials.
If I may follow up on that, Senator Brown and Senator Johnson, is that one of the things that I hope to see accomplished in this country is that apprenticeship have the same respect as a person that's been a lawyer or a doctor. That is one of the keys that has been a failure in our country. We don't look on journey workers favorably like we look on people that's going to law school or to doctor schools. The Europeans, a person that completes a European apprenticeship program, registered a program like we have in this country, they have the same status as a person that graduates from a four-year university and go on to be a doctor. They have the same status because it takes the same determination and education to become a journey worker, plumber, electrician, as it takes to be a doctor or lawyer. And once we put those people on the same pedestal, you're going to see more people come into apprenticeship than you've ever seen in your life.
Okay. Thank you. Anybody else? Thank you. We really appreciate you joining us today. Anybody else wishing to testify on these two appointments? All right. We're going to close the public hearing. The State Apprenticeship and Training Council, we appreciate you two joining us this afternoon. I'm going to open a public hearing on the electrical and elevator board and ask Mr. Douglas Algetz to come forward. Did I get your name right?
Yes, okay. Pretty close. It is Algetz. So. I live in Sublimity. I'm a president of Kaiser Electric here in Salem. And why do I want to be on the electrical and elevator board? Over the last 3 or 4 years, my company has traveled out of the state and received licenses in 6 other western states. And in doing that, we've had to deal with billing agencies of other states. And I could honestly say that Oregon's billing codes and electrical and elevator board really is head and shoulders above everybody else. And I'm also on a government affairs committee for our contractors association, so I'm aware that there's forces outside the state that would like to lower the standards within the state with apprenticeship or licensing, and I think that those are very important issues. And I don't think you can increase opportunities by lowering standards, so I think I'd like to do my part to make sure that that continues.
Thank you. I noticed in your interest statement, you said that Oregon is by far the best in terms of code enforcement to safety standards compared to all the states that you have you do business in. And is it in terms of worker safety and protection of the public, or what's the sort of criteria you're using?
Not so much OSHA, because that's kind of federally regulated, but the safety practices in the electrical industry are better here than other places.
Okay. All right. Any questions for this gentleman? Senator Farioli.
I just hope you'll do everything you can to make sure that the field staff doesn't get inspired in the field to rewrite codes as they do inspections. It's a customer service question that occurs often in the rural areas, and there's often arguments in the field about what the code means, and rather than having the inspectors insist that they're the law, which occasionally occurs, if you could do everything you can to encourage a customer service approach to getting those compliance issues dealt. I mean, we're all, I think, trying to get to keep our focus on public safety as the issue. Mm-hmm. And to do that, we try to get compliance with the code. But often there's a customer service mentality that sometimes falls out of the equation. And I just hope that you'll be a leader on keeping that issue in the forefront, particularly in rural communities.
I think that's kind of the mission of the Electrical and Elevator Board. 30 years ago, there was only 4 or 5 jurisdictions in the state that did inspections. Well, that's ballooned to 35 or so now, and the only regulation over them is the Billing Codes Division, the Electrical and Elevator Board. So that's what it's all about.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you very much. We really appreciate your willingness to join us today. Okay, with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on the Electrical and Elevator Board. I'm going to open a public hearing on the Commission on Asian Affairs. Carol Suzuki, Ms. Myla Lee, and Ms. Liani Reese, come on up. Good afternoon and welcome. Ms. Suzuki, do you want to start out?
No, I thought this was
okay. All right. Go ahead.
Hi, well, good afternoon. My name is Mila Swen Lei. I'm with the Executive Leadership Institute. We do professional development and training for mid to senior level government officials, both at the local, state, and federal level. And in particular, I work with international governments. I have 10 years of experience in nonprofit and social services, and I'm particularly interested in Asian affairs as it relates to human and social service access and needs. And my interest in serving on the commission in particular is because I see that the Asian community has been around in Oregon for quite some time, and I think that there is either a fear or somewhat of an apathy of government and of reaching out of their own community, not just across different ethnic Asian groups to each other, but also into the community and into for the benefit of their neighbors and also for the state of Oregon. And so what I would like to do is be a model, but also a path of opportunity for them to become more civically engaged and more community and engage in their community more. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Chair Brown, members of the committee, my name is Leonie Reeves, and it's an honor to be here today. I was here 3 or 4 years ago testifying about the funding for the advocacy commissions, and I'm pleased to see that the state of Oregon has taken the step to show the minority and advocacy commissions that these commissions are worthwhile. I want to bring a couple of things to the commission. First is a link to the Korean American community that hasn't been there for some time. I'm currently the chair of the public affairs of the Korean American Citizens League, and starting next month I'll be the president of that organization, and we work within the Korean American community in the Portland area and also throughout Oregon and southern Washington. And as a member of the Korean community, I want to make sure that their needs, their experience, their expertise are brought to the commission, and also likewise that the work of the commission and in the government as well is brought back to that community. But also I want to see a larger integration of the Asian community. I think that, as you all know, the Asian American community in Oregon is extremely diverse. It's extremely culturally rich. And it's also fairly isolated, both from the communities within the Asian community and from mainstream community. And I think my own experience, I'm Korean-born, but I was raised as an adopted child in an American Caucasian household. And so I've learned to walk in a lot of different worlds, and I think that my experience as an adoptee has made it much easier for me to reach outside of my community, outside of the Korean community, outside of mainstream community, and really walk within a lot of different worlds to make sure that a collaborative relationship is formed between a lot of different communities. So I'd like to see just a stronger, more integrated Asian community. Thank you. Ms. Reeves, a question for you, seeing that you're a relatively new member of the bar. You know, the Oregon State Bar has really struggled with diversifying its membership. Any thoughts on how the Oregon State Bar could be more welcoming to people of color?
I'm glad you asked that question. I'm also the co-chair of the Oregon Minority Lawyers Association, and we specifically do recruitment and retention issues within the Oregon State Bar. And it's an issue that we struggle with all the time, and one of the problems that we see is that minority candidates will come to Oregon for law school, but then they'll look around, they'll look at the legislature, they'll look at the community, they'll look at community leaders, and they won't see any representation of their minority groups, and so they leave. And they go back to San Francisco, they go back to Hawaii, they go back to Seattle. And so one of the things that, you know, while I do a lot of work specifically within the legal community trying to increase diversity in law firms, increase diversity in government, attorney agencies, I think also just looking at raising the profile of Asians and other minorities in government in general, in any field of government, whether it's in any branch, whether it's the legislature, the executive branch, the judicial branch, I think just showing minority students who come here that there is a place for them, and that when they look around, there are other people that look like them, will do a lot to help keep them here. Because we don't have a problem attracting them, it's a problem keeping them.
Ms. Suzuki?
My name is Carol Suzuki, and I'm the chair of the Oregon Commission on Asian Affairs, and it gives me great pleasure to testify on behalf of Leonie Reeves and Mila Lee, because they are two outstanding appointees. I have been working hard to recruit members just like this to our commission and do good things. So the state of Oregon, I feel, needs the skill, the talent, and the cultural knowledge that both Mila and Leonie bring to this appointment, and I think they will serve as an excellent bridge between Asian American communities and the state, and serve as resources to legislators and state agencies. And I also feel that their contribution will help the commissions as they rebuild and start anew. Mila and Leonie's cultural and professional backgrounds and personal accomplishments make them not only excellent appointees to the Commission on Asian Affairs, but I feel it also makes them exceptional candidates for other state boards and commissions, and I have shared that with the governor's office. I expect that you will continue to hear and read about their accomplishments in the years to come, as they are most definitely a part of that next generation of leaders that will help this state, and we're very lucky to have their service. Thank you.
Thank you. And Ms. Suzuki, thank you for your work in making sure we pass the bill restoring the commission. So
you're welcome.
Questions for this panel?
I hope you run for the legislature, but I hope you wait until I retire. You're in my Senate seat, so happy to work on recruiting you for other positions.
Thank you both
for joining us this afternoon. We look forward to working with you and appreciate your willingness to serve the state of Oregon. So thank you.
Thank you.
All right, that would have closed the public hearing on the Oregon Commission on Asian Affairs. Open a work session on the Oregon Commission on Asian Affairs. The chair would move the appointments of Ms. Lee and Ms. Reeves to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Would you please call the roll, James?
Senator Bates. Senator Johnson.
Aye.
Senator Nelson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Crayola.
Aye.
Chair Brown.
Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Thank you. I'm going to do Carrie at the end because I think we're going to do most of these in block.
Okay.
And then the other one we didn't do was that we've already heard. Okay, let's go back up. State Apprenticeship and Training Council, open a work session. Chair would move Mr. Robert Rogers and Mr. John Rozell to the State Apprenticeship and Training Council. Any discussion? Would you please call the roll?
Senator Bates. Senator Johnson.
Aye.
Senator Nelson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Crayola.
Aye.
Chair Brown.
Chair votes aye. Motion carries. And then Chair would open the work session on the Electrical and Elevator Board. Chair would move Mr. Doug Algetz to the Electrical and Elevator Board. Discussion? Would you please call the roll, James?
Senator Johnson.
Aye.
Senator Nelson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Crayola.
Aye.
Chair Brown.
Chair votes aye. Motion carries. And we'll select a carrier at the end. Okay, let's move up to open a public hearing on the State Aviation Board. Mr. Christopher Korich, would you please come on out?
Madam Chair.
Senator Johnson.
The tie alone ought to qualify this candidate.
I don't think so.
Confirmation.
Did you want to testify on this appointment? You can. You're welcome to do so from the dais if you wish to.
Thank you.
Take it away. Tell us a little bit about yourself and why you would like to serve on this particular commission.
My name is Chris Korich. I work for the Port of Portland as long-range planner for long-range planning. I've worked in aviation for over 21 years. It's a passion of mine, and it's something that when a plane flies over, I look up, I see it, and it's just something that's totally involuntary. In aviation, you can become a pilot, which I did, and as a career path, you can become involved in aviation as a pilot, but I chose to work on the airport side. And so 21 years, I've managed four airports in the state, from Grass Strip Molino Airport to Portland International Airport most recently, and I've also got about 6 years experience doing consulting work. I did worked about 16 of the airports in the state, so I've been around, and it's been a delightful thing for me to do. I'd like to give back a little bit of that to the state, and the State Aviation Board is an opportunity for me to do that. My employer, the Port of Portland, will allow me to do this, and while I'll represent the Port of Portland, I do have the broader interests of the state at heart, and so I look forward to doing it for that reason.
Great. Questions? Senator Farrioli.
Thank you, Madam Chair. How many state airports are capable of handling commercial air traffic for commuter air?
Senator Brown, Senator Farrioli, I'm guessing it's probably a dozen or so that could handle the smaller commuter aircraft, such as the Horizon Dash 8.
Okay. I think, Madam Chair, we have commercial services to three. And I just wondered if I could hear a little of the vision of the applicant on how to expand aviation to help conquer the time and distance issues that plague rural Oregon.
Madam Chair, Senator Farrioli, those are very serious issues, and the airlines are struggling mightily to do that. And in a free market scenario, asking Horizon to go and serve an area that's very lightly populated is a real difficult challenge for them. I mean, there are four airlines that are in bankruptcy right now. It's a real challenge. I think from our standpoint, the best that we can do is maintain an airport infrastructure so that when market opportunities present themselves or different technologies present themselves, then the opportunity will be there. I can remember visiting the Bend Airport about 15 years ago, and there wasn't much going on. If you go there today, there are about 900 employees. And there's a lot going on. So I think the maintaining the infrastructure that we have and adding airports where we don't have infrastructure will be the role that we can play. And then encouraging local communities that want service. Redmond is a good example. The air service committee that they've had there at one time went out and helped promote additional air service. So that's how I think we could accomplish that.
Senator Farrelly.
Just to point out that if that were our attitude toward light rail, we'd be preserving infrastructure and not providing subsidy. I just want to point out that I think the struggle for commercial air service to most of rural Oregon has failed. I mean, we've lost the struggle. The question is what now will be our attitude toward bringing air service into the multimodal transportation network that we're building for the 21st century. And it may, in fact, require us to look at some incentives. And I just want to put that on the table.
Thank you, Senator Farrelly. Now I know what to get, how to get you to support light rail, so that's good.
Well, Madam Chair, we can talk.
I'm game. Senator Nelson, any questions? Mr. Kortz, could you talk a little bit about what you see, sort of your vision in terms of the air industry in Oregon? And I appreciate Senator Farrelly's concerns, having had a husband in enterprise, and while I was living in Portland and the difficulties of trying to commute by car, sort of what you see in terms of all of Oregon and how we're going to meet Oregon's air needs.
I think Senator Brown, we need to preserve the airport infrastructure that we have, and again, as I said, fill in the holes that we don't have. We have a growing a company in Bend that's a good example, Lancair, that is building small aircraft, very high, new technology airplanes, very different from the ones that were built back in the 80s. Those will provide opportunities for us to move around the state better. That's the type of aircraft that could do that. So I think supporting companies like that are developing new technology is one way that we can connect the dots there and make that transportation happen.
Do you think the Port of Portland is adequate to meet the growing needs of the state in terms of transporting our growing population?
There are a number of commercial service airports in the state that serve local populations. The last airport master plan I worked on, we calculated there were about 600,000 people that came up from Eugene to fly out of PDX. There's a great airport in Eugene. I don't know what that number is now, but the Eugene Airport should continue to develop. Redmond should continue. PDX is a great airport, and we've got a lot of capacity, but we don't need to have everybody come through Portland. Medford Airport has service with jets going to the south. That's a good thing. So I think we need key airports for general aviation and commercial aviation. It's a mixture of both that will serve the needs of the state.
Thank you. Senator Johnson, any questions?
Just a comment, if you'd indulge me, Madam Chair.
Go ahead.
In the interest of full disclosure, I've known Chris personally and worked with him for two decades. I think he is going to be a great addition to the board. The new Department of Aviation has had a lot of turnover. They have lost institutional memory. I think Chris will bring that to them. I think you've heard in the line of questioning today a certain rural enthusiasm to do everything possible to look at an Air Oregon model to try to bring commercial service back to some of the underserved communities without damaging the passenger loading out of Pendleton. Certainly looking at some opportunities along the coast, and now with the big investment that's going to happen at North Bend, that there are opportunities there to serve folks that heretofore have not been served by air. I think Mr. Korich is going to be a great addition to the board. I think when the Department of Aviation was envisioned, having the Port of Portland at that board table to help bring the perspective of the international airport, and also, frankly, to bring the power of the Port of Portland to helping with some of the infrastructure questions is a very good thing. And while some have been anxious about it, that table at that board in that agency is exactly where this interplay between the big guys and the little guys ought to take place. And because I've worked with Chris on rural airports, I have great confidence in believing that he understands the needs of airports in John Day and LeGrand and Burns, as well as he understands PDX. So I think this is a superior appointment, and I wholeheartedly support it.
Great. Anything else? I think you're off the hook.
Thank you very much.
With that, we're going to close, unless anybody wishes to testify in Mr. Korich's appointment. All right. With that, we'll close the public hearing on the State Aviation Board. open a work session on the State Aviation Board. Senator Johnson.
Madam Chair, I would move the appointment of Mr. Korich to the State Aviation Board.
Senator Johnson moves the appointment of Chris Korich to the State Aviation Board. Any discussion? James, would you please call the roll?
Aye.
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 Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Congratulations, I think. let's move. Let's go down to. Let's open a public hearing on the State Board of Chiropractic Examiners, Michael McGickey. Did I get that right? Welcome. Please introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about yourself and why you would like to do this.
Chair Brown and members of the committee, I'm grateful to be able to be here today, and I hope that you'll forgive me any lack of congressional etiquette that might be displayed. My name is Michael McGeehee, and I am a licensed chiropractic physician in the state of Oregon. For nearly the past 15 years, I've been in private practice in Pendleton, and I want you to know that I love being a chiropractor, and I get a tremendous amount of satisfaction from treating my patients. I don't help all of them, but I try to help all of them. And sometimes that help might be you're in the wrong place. But I do have a sense of duty both to my patients and to my profession. And that, I think, is why I'm here today.
Okay, thank you. I just, in reviewing your resume, it looks like you're a fairly busy soul, and I'm just curious whether you feel like you have the time and energy to participate on the board and whether that'll be of any issue for you and your family.
Well, my wife has asked me the same question. But she fully supports me. And I don't think that I'm actually any busier than most chiropractors in private practice. I do have some interests, some special interests, though, that I am following up on. But I will make the time necessary to make sure that I participate in a full way.
Questions? Senator Nelson.
Just a comment. I've worked with the doctor on several issues in Pendleton, and he's always been forthright and honest and tells it like it is. And I think he'll be a really good addition to the board because I think in the legislature there's always conflict with the chiropractic issues, and you know, if you can bring some stability to that, which I think that you will, that would certainly greatly help our process, and I appreciate the fact that you're trying to do that and that you're willing to serve. Thank you.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A comment and a question. I note in your credentials that you're a private pilot, so if Mr. Korich can improve the airports, we'll make sure that he can attend the meetings better.
I was going to ask about that, but I decided not to.
My serious question is one that my good friend and colleague, Senator Nelson, touched on, and that is the divisiveness on the board and the divisiveness within your profession. And I would at least like to have a comment on the record about what your approach will be to try to resolve that. I think it has been a problem for your profession in the building, a great deal of misunderstanding about it, and I would just like to hear your suggested approach to try to reconcile some of those divergence of opinions.
Chair Brown and Senator Johnson, members of the committee, that is something that is, I think, a regrettable fact in my profession. We are a very diverse group. But I've always felt that that really is a strength. Unfortunately, it cuts two ways, and that is that it does create a lot of conversation. But I've always been a good listener, and I actually try to do more than just listen, especially with those that have an opinion that's differing from my own. And that is that I really try to search why I feel the way that I do. Why do they feel the way they do? And I really like to try to find some common ground, move forward in common ground. I like to include as many people, as many chiropractors as possible. I want the public to have access to as much different in the way of different treatments for chiropractors as that we can do within the confines of safety to the public. But I can't say that I can mend those fences. But I can tell you that I will try to include as many people as I can and their opinions, and to try to integrate those things together.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions for Dr. McGehee? Thank you very much. We appreciate you driving over from Pendleton to join us today. So,
thank you.
With that, we're going to close the public hearing and open the work session. Senator Nelson.
I would move a good doctor's appointment to the Board of Chiropractic Examiners.
Senator Nelson has moved Michael McGehee's appointment to the State Board of Chiropractic Examiners. Any discussion? Would you please call the roll, James?
Senator Johnson?
Aye.
Senator Nelson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Perillo?
Aye.
Chair Brown?
Chair votes aye. Thank you very much. Let's see. Next, Columbia River Gorge Commission, Ms. Roberta Kirk. Would you please come forward and welcome. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Please state your name for the record and just tell us a little bit about yourself and why you want to serve on this particular commission.
My name is Roberta Kirk, and I'm from the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs, and I just want to serve on this commission because our people originated from the Columbia River Gorge, and I feel like we should have a voice and along the river, and my work is a Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Coordinator, otherwise known as NAGPRA, and I have worked with many of the tribes that have resided along the Columbia River, and we have good relations with most of them in the reburials and repatriations that we've had.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Kirk. Question, Senator Johnson.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your reason for wanting to serve and acknowledge it as an important reason. This is a contentious board and has come into the public view lots and lots of times over a lot of issues that differ from the issues that you've articulated, land use, ability to use land in the gorge. Could you comment a little bit on your philosophy about those kinds of issues with respect to the management of the gorge?
Well, I'm all for cultural preservation and to help maintain the cultural properties and everything that is along the river, but also I'm not opposed to any kind of economic developments that might seem in the best interest of the board and along the people.
Thank you.
Thank
you, Madam Chair. I guess I'll echo Senator Johnson's comments a little bit. The Scenic Area Act has two very important parts. One is the cultural and scenic preservation of the incomparable Columbia River Gorge area. The other one is economic development. Within the urban growth boundaries for a wide variety of purposes, and then outside the urban growth boundaries for those industries related to visitor services and tourism. And we've just seen so much controversy. I mean, I think the most recent one is on the Dew Point Inn. There's an issue about a longstanding fishery that's being conducted there by the Hoyker family under the dam that we seem not to be able to resolve. I mean, some of these issues are very controversial, and I just wondered, along with my colleague Senator Johnson, have you thought about how you will approach the balance of the need to protect the cultural resources, which you are clearly dedicated to those things, and the issues that are very controversial, even including the development of the casino in Cascade Locks. How do you intend to find that balance?
I'm awaiting a very large package from the Columbia River Gorge Commission to read up on the issues of the Dew Point Inn and some of the other issues that have come before them. And so, I don't have any kind of official capacity with the casino, so I'm not involved at that. I seldom ever visit the one that we have.
Well, Madam Chair, I cannot make the same claim.
I'm sure you can.
I believe that that there is a very important role for the peoples of the Warm Spring to play on the Gorge Commission, and I welcome mm-hmm. this applicant's willingness to serve.
Thank you.
And just for the record, Madam Chairman, I noticed that in her application she cites her state senator as Ron Wyden.
I thought that was great, Senator Ferriero.
Cross that off. My name there. I am your son.
I thought it was quite charming myself. All right. Anything further for Ms. Kirk? We really appreciate you joining us today, and this is not an easy assignment that you've been given, and we wish you the best of luck and appreciate your willingness to serve the state of Oregon. So,
thank you.
With that, we'll close the public hearing on the Columbia River Gorge Commission open work session. Senator Ferrioli.
I move the appointment of this nominee.
Senator Ferrioli has moved the appointment
confirmation
of Roberta Kirk to the Columbia River Gorge Commission. Any discussion? James, would you please call the roll?
Senator Johnson?
Aye.
Senator
Johnson? Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion carries.
Thank you.
All right, Chief Grace, why don't you come on up, and we're going to do the Oregon Criminal Justice Commission.
Sure. We still miss you.
Good afternoon and welcome. Appreciate you coming down.
Chair Brown, committee members, good afternoon. My name is Frank Grace. A little bit about myself. Born and raised in Portland, so that makes me an Oregonian. My parents actually moved to Portland in the early 40s. Currently, I'm in the house that I grew up in, 1912 Portland-style home off of Southeast Hawthorne. And I like to tell people I'm doing one room at a time. I'm not a contractor. I heard some contractor language or talk earlier. My extent and my abilities of contracting go as far as my Home Depot card will allow me to go. A little bit about me. I grew up, like I said, I mentioned I grew up in Portland. Attended grade schools and high school in the Portland area. Served 2 years in the Army and came back on a GI Bill. Was able to obtain my associate degree in law enforcement from Portland Community College. I was also very fortunate to have a job working at Fred Meyers at the time as a store detective, which allowed me to be eligible for a government grant to attend the University of Portland, where I graduated with my bachelor's degree. I then like to tell people that I did what was probably the most rational thing I could do at 25 years of age with a college degree and having worked for a good employer for 5 years. I decided I'd leave and go to California. And well, I did, and I spent 6 years there before I had the calling to come back. But that was my first experience with full-time police work was in California. I came back in the 80s, went and lived and worked in Cannon Beach as a police officer. At that point, I think I'd maxed out on doing government work and police work and decided I'd go into the retail, or excuse me, back into the private sector. So I did, and I went to work for a large corporation in Portland called Rydell International, and was for an employee there for 5 years, three of them as his area manager. He was Rydell was a good employer, but my last job assignment that I had with them convinced me that, you know, perhaps government work wasn't that bad, and that was an assignment to Nome, Alaska. I'm not a real fan of flying or water. The job assignment I had was to manage a security force out in the Bering Sea on a gold dredge. So you flew out in a helicopter every day, or you went out in a boat. So after 7 months up there and leaving in November, it was very cold. I began looking, and I went to work actually for Multnomah County Sheriff's Office for 2 years in the corrections program. Was recruited by by the Probation Department of Multnomah County and spent 12 years, additional 12 years with Multnomah County, nine of my total about 14 years with Multnomah County as a program administrator manager with Multnomah County. I tell you that because at the same time I worked for Multnomah County, I was a reserve police officer. I couldn't get it out of my system, so I was a reserve police officer with the city of Gladstone. In 2002, I applied for and was hired as their police chief for the city of Gladstone. And that brings me up to where I am now. I've been a chair for several committees that I think have been real important. I currently help co-chair a committee with OLCC, and it's really been an eye-opener because I'm the only representing for the Chiefs Association, and it really has been, like I said, an eye-opener for me to bring my insights from police and also from probation and from the public sector into that committee. So when I found out about the Oregon Criminal Justice Committee, it to me seemed like a good fit. I'm a good team player, and I do bring that perspective of not only the private sector, but also the public sector, law enforcement, and parole and probation. I would also add that I spent 1 year working for Judge Haas when he started up the Stop Drug Program. Mm-hmm. And for me, that was a real important piece of my law enforcement career, because that helped me see that when we talk about the criminal justice system, when we talk about drug issues, we're not talking about just locking people up. You have to have other components. You have to have the court system, parole and probation, but you also have a treatment program. If you don't have a treatment component, it's not going to work. So I'm very excited about being here and having this opportunity, and I think I'd be a good fit for this commission.
Great. Thank you. Ours is in 1914, so we're in the same stage you are in Woodstock neighborhood. So I totally and completely feel your pain. Senator Johnson, any questions?
No.
Senator Nelson? I just saw the movie Crash. I don't know if you've seen it. Have you seen it?
I purchased it. Yes.
It was one of the best movies I've seen in a long time. Following seeing the movie, I ended up getting stopped by a police officer. I wasn't driving. I'm not going to tell you who was. But it was just very interesting to me as a white woman that having seen the movie and never had any personal experiences with being stopped by a police officer, I was scared. And I just kind of want to know your thoughts about how we can sort of, develop better relationships between law enforcement and the community. And I know that our mayor and our police chief are working hard in the city of Portland, but I'm just curious your thoughts given your very diverse background.
Well, I think, as I heard mentioned earlier, education. I have been teaching down at the police academy for about 10 or 12 years now. I teach cultural diversity. I also teach ethics to supervisors and management, which includes police chiefs and sheriffs. It's very important for us as managers, as leaders. I always like to say that as managers, a police chief or a sheriff, we are the role model not only for our agencies, but for the community. And we need to train our personnel and let them know what is accepted behavior, what is not accepted behavior. I think it's also, from my private sector experience, I would say it's also a little bit of marketing. We have to market why police do what it is they do. What are the procedures when you're stopped by a police officer? What are they most likely going to ask you to do? In California, when we stopped a car, it was very common to see the hands go up on the steering wheel and no one would get out of the car, because if they did, you knew you were in for some excitement. So I think it's an education piece. Sheriff Raul Ramirez down in Marion County put together a very good training video for the Hispanic community. Excellent video that explains just that, why you're being stopped, how you should act, and what you're expected to be asked. So again, I hope I'm answering your question. It's an education piece that really has to start from the top down. And I think my experience at the academy with both basic police officers and the management staff has really been a good, I think, avenue for me to push the professionalism.
Right. Senator Johnson.
Thank you. Would that I shared your experience of having never been pulled over before. Many of my conversations with OSP start driving license and registration, so I don't have
you. I shouldn't say never. I was when I was 16, but that was a really long time ago.
I appreciate your answer to Senator Brown's question. I have in the past, and I'm scheduled in the next couple of weeks to go on a ride-along with some working officers in my district. I think that the task that you have ahead of you, talking to police officers at the academy about their professionalism, and yet officers faced with the dilemma of walking up to a vehicle having absolutely no idea what's going on inside of it, and in my observation, the bad guys getting badder and more willing to, particularly under the influence of drugs, to commit brazen acts. It's a fine line where you're teaching officers to interact professionally with the public, and yet the officers every day that they're out on the streets putting their lives in danger with people who may not be thinking correctly because of the influence of all kinds of drugs. So I appreciated your very thoughtful answer that you gave to Senator Brown. I think there's a dilemma, though, on both sides. How do you teach the officers to protect themselves in situations where coming up to a pulled over car at night, they're alone, backup is a long ways away? What do they do to take care of themselves, too?
Well, officer safety is designed throughout the every class of the academy. That's paramount. And one of the things I stress in my cultural diversity trainings is that we should all strive to subscribe to the concept of treating others as you want to be treated. Right? That would be the ideal. When it comes to officer safety, it almost becomes black and white. That is, when you approach a car or a person on the street, you treat everyone the same. When I'm stopping a car and that person driving the car has a vehicle that looks like mine, and they look like me, and I therefore assume they reflect my same values, that's when I'm going to get hurt. So what you have to do is practice the same approach, the same manner of contact each and every time. Now, the downside about with that is if you've never been stopped before, you might think, wow, this person is really cold and hardcore. No, it's because they need to go home at night. As a police officer in California, I had my opportunities to have time off due to injuries. As a police officer in Oregon, I've been injured as well on the Oregon coast. And I went right from San Jose to Cannon Beach. Quite a contrast. But yet the same thing happened, and the same attitudes caused the events to happen to me. So when I talk about officer safety, I say that it's 24/7. It's every car and every person the same. That guarantees your survival, and also, I think, a better reputation within your community with people you come in contact with. They'll understand.
Thank you for a very thoughtful answer.
Sarah Nelson.
Yes, thank you, Chief. Just a point of information, I guess. I've been talking to some of my local law enforcement officers. In the city of Hermiston, they have a wireless cloud. There's a guy that's, there's Hermiston police actually have an in-car computer. They pick up a suspect, or they stop while they type in the thing. Comes out with all the information. And the officers I've talked to have said now when they approach a car, they at least have some idea of who may be in that car, if that person does have a record. And the police department there in Hermiston said, this is just a wonderful use of technology. Safety saves man hours. I mean, I don't know. You have to have the wireless cloud is the big thing. And Hermiston does have that. But, I mean, that's something, everything's related. We ought to be thinking about that. And the first one sort of brought that home to me.
Could you please state for the record what a wireless cloud is?
Well, it's like, it isn't Hermiston. They have put up towers and so that you can access the internet wireless. You don't have to have wired to connect.
Okay.
And it started out of the Umatilla Depot down there, the chemical depot.
Uh-huh. Right.
Where they sent out all these handheld, wonderful Dick Tracy things. Nobody could use them. Nobody knew how to do them. So there was a local guy by the name of Fred Ziari. He was a brilliant guy. He said, well, we can figure this out. So he got a a deal from the Department of Defense. And so that it covers a 600 square miles, about 30 by 20. And he's actually now contracted with the Transportation Security Administration to monitor non-airport potential security problems on the Columbia River, on the dams, barges, railroads. I mean, it's a whole new field that's just breaking out, and it would help your folks substantially if we could figure out. Maybe we have to do something at the statewide level and that's to help that out.
Technology does not come cheap.
Yeah.
Technology is the phrase, wave of the future. I think when I look at some of the devices that we have now, Blackberries that are capable of pulling up all the information, that is truly Dick Tracy stuff. There is still further technology that police, that law enforcement need. One of the ones I'm excited about is a little machine that you carry in your hand about the size of a PDA, and the person puts their fingerprint on it, and you know who you're dealing with.
Yeah.
You know exactly who you're dealing with right then and there, which for a person who's not done anything wrong is a nice tool because you're on your way. For the person who has that fake ID and who's wanted in other states or other countries, it'll identify them right then and there. So technology is a good thing.
Yeah. Just expensive.
It is.
Senator Farrioli.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I apologize for being out of the room for some of your testimony. I don't think anybody would disagree with the ideal that at the end of your shift you go home safe. That is really paramount. And a lot of us in the legislature are particularly sensitive to the sacrifice and the courage of people who serve in law enforcement. And we had a pretty personal introduction with an intrusion into the Senate chambers by a deranged individual that I think heightened everybody's aware of personal security in a graphic way that possibly transcends anything that you could do in an orientation seminar. And this guy took over the Senate. But I just want to make that really clear. But the question I think that occurs to many, those incidences of the use of deadly force that seem to go way beyond what a layperson considers a reasonable response. And we have a couple of incidences that were discussed during the legislative session. There was a recent incident that's still under investigation of an individual who was clearly in an altered state of consciousness and was where deadly force was used up in the metropolitan area. And there was an incident in Bend a couple of years ago where an individual got into an altercation with the police and ended up, even though these people are unarmed, they end up the subjects of the use of deadly force. So I guess I just want to ask you if I could get your read. I think training is probably the answer to those issues, but how do we as lay people understand the use of deadly force when sometimes the circumstances seem that use of deadly force strains the definitions of when it's appropriate?
Well, let me just first say that sometimes it's real easy to do it the Monday night quarterbacking when you weren't there and you have time to read through the paperwork and do the what-ifs. I encourage community members to go out and do ride-along with the local jurisdictions so you'll find out what really is involved in police work. I watch a lot of television. I watch movies. Crash was a good movie. But you know the reality of it is that's not reality. I like to point out to community members, that the public, that when you watch an hour program, I'm always amazed how much they can accomplish in an hour. It takes the regular officer about an hour to process, say, shoplifter, 30 to 60 minutes, depending on the circumstances. And what I've seen with many ride-alongs, people who go for ride-alongs, is they say, my goodness, you responded to this call, but now you're doing all this paperwork. Yes, that's real. I've had people in the car next to me say, so how many pursuits do you get into every night? Well, I can tell you how many I've been in my whole career on one hand. I can't think of any police officer that
dad looks forward to the day they have to pull their weapon or to take on someone, because it's really traumatic. It really is. I've had my share of winning and losing, and it's something you do not forget. You just don't. The more tools that police officers can have, such as tasers and so on and so forth, the better, so we don't have to use deadly force. I always like to say that when you see the person in the police car or the uniform, you know that person can be located. You know who that person is. They've gone through training. They've had to attend firearm training and meet certain standards. They know not to pull their gun unless they're going to use it. They know not to shoot their gun unless there's a clear backstop, that is, no one in the back. The suspect, on the other hand, has no requirements and no standards. They can shoot into a crowd of people at you. It doesn't matter to them. So when it comes to police officers and use of deadly force, I can't think of anyone who looks forward to that day. It's really traumatic on both. And of course, for me, the worst case scenario is having an officer that is that's killed in the line of duty. That's just it's long lasting, not only for the spouse and their loved ones, but the department and the community as well.
Thank you. Mr. Prinz, any other comments?
Madam Chair,
you miss us.
What's that?
You miss us.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Craig Prinz for the record, Executive Director of the Criminal Justice Commission. Just wanted to say, remind you that the reason why I think you can see why Frank will be a perfect person on the Criminal Justice Commission, remind you that the Criminal Justice Commission is not the Law Enforcement Contacts Committee, which is the racial profiling you're talking about. It's supposed to be the impartial policy forum for the whole public safety system. It's supposed to look at cost efficiency, effectiveness, and really it's a sentencing commission. It's in charge of the guidelines. And so bringing a law enforcement perspective, I think right now we will have a full commission. We've got four lawyers. A citizen activist in Anna Peterson, who runs the No Meth Not in My Neighborhood, Mike Burton, who was a legislator for a long time. We didn't have anyone from a law enforcement or a parole and probation background, and so I encouraged Frank to think about serving in this capacity, and I think it's going to really help us. But I wanted to remind you also that's the duty, is to really look at that, and most of the general fund money, as you know, is spent after sentencing and after at corrections and LYA. So I think it's really what Frank said, the first part, saying, he brings perspective from the street, and it's great to hear that he hears that you have to go through the whole system and have treatment at the end, so we make sure that we're making it more likely they don't come back. The other thing I wanted to make kind of a public service announcement, which is the Law Enforcement Contacts Committee, which is kind of some of the conversation, is alive and well. We met with the Sheriff's Association last month. I'm going to the Chief's Association on Wednesday, and former Chief Justice Edwin Peterson is now the chair of that, and so we have a data collection subcommittee, and we have a community outreach committee, which I think is what the chief was talking about, trying to get the communities out there to understand why folks are being stopped and to collect the data and let the chiefs and the sheriffs really be the leaders that I think they will be on that issue. So I think on all those fronts, I'm really encouraged that Frank's willing to serve.
Okay. Anything further? Appreciate you joining us. Thanks for coming down to Salem today.
Chair Brown, eight members, thank you.
Thank you. I close the public hearing on the Criminal Justice Commission. Open work session on Criminal Justice Commission. Chair would move the appointment of Chief Grace to the Criminal Justice Commission. Any discussion? Would you please call the roll?
Senator Johnson?
Aye.
Senator Nelson?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Perry? Aye.
Chair Brown?
Chair votes aye. Motion carries. There's a young man in back who has a parent with him. What's the parent? What's your name?
Sherry Springer.
Sure. Okay. You know, we were going to do yours with, we've got a phone appointment, but let's go ahead and get you out of here. Open a public hearing on Fair Dismissal Appeals Board and invite Ms. Springer to the dais. Yeah,
thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Sherry Springer. I'm the board vice chair on the Lebanon Community School District Board of Directors. And why I'm interested in this is very simply, I have a strong commitment to public education, and I welcome any opportunity to partner and serve in that capacity. I'm interested in bringing my skills to the table to work with this appeals board. I would love to come before you and tell you my great vision with this, but this is a different kind of committee than what we've heard a lot of testimony about today. Mm-hmm. So I offer you my services and my commitment to that and a fair process in that way.
All right. Questions? Sarah Farrielli? Sarah Johnson? All right. We really appreciate your willingness to serve the state of Oregon. Appreciate you coming this afternoon.
So thank you.
Thank you. That we're going to close the public hearing, and don't worry, we're not moving forward on your appointment because we're going to do the phone appointment later. Okay. Let's go back down the list. All right. We're going to open a public hearing on the Psychiatric Security Review Board and invite Mr. Audette forward. Good afternoon and welcome.
Good afternoon, Chair Brown, members of the committee. Thank you for inviting me here today. My name is David Audette. I've been an attorney for 26 years, and that's probably the root of my interest in serving on this board. Obviously, I've represented many people who have had mental illnesses and have become involved in the criminal justice system. I've found that to be very interesting and very challenging at the same time. Personally, I've also committed quite a bit of volunteer time to my profession, to my community, to my neighborhood, and that's another reason why I'm interested in serving on this board.
Could you tell us a little bit about your law practice at this point in time and just wanting to make sure that you meet the statutory criteria for this particular board?
Sure. It's almost exclusively criminal defense work in both state and federal courts, and that's really been my practice, the focus of my practice for many years. In addition to that, I've also represented people in civil commitment hearings, which, of course, can also result in hospitalizations.
Thank you. Questions for this? This board takes a lot of time and energy. I suspect you're fairly experienced with the nature of this board and sometimes the controversial nature of this board. Any concerns about conflicts between your legal practice and doing this position?
I've discussed that with Ms. Buckley, and I've learned through my own experience that if I can schedule things, I can manage my life. And we've already discussed that, and I'm pretty good about scheduling things as well as handling controversy if that should come up.
One of the new obligations of this board will be in the future also looking at juveniles. Any experience dealing with juveniles in our juvenile dependency or delinquency system?
Quite a bit, as a matter of fact. As I mentioned, you don't have a copy of that, but I helped reestablish the Juvenile Rights Project many years ago. Represented many children in Multnomah County at that time in the delinquency and dependency field while in private practice. I have continued to represent children in the dependency and delinquency field, not so much in the last couple of years since the governor did appoint one of my law partners to be a judge in Washington County, and she now handles the juvenile department there. So it's slowed my practice down there.
Okay.
But I've had a lot of experience in that area.
Okay. Any other questions for Mr. Audette? Appreciate you joining us this afternoon. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Anybody else wishing to testify on this particular appointment to the Psychiatric Security Review Board? No volunteers? Okay, we're going to close the public hearing on the Psychiatric Security Review Board, open a work session. The chair would move Mr. David Audette to the Psychiatric Security Review Board. Discussion. Would you call the roll, James, please?
Senator Bates. Senator Johnson.
Aye.
Senator Nelson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Farrell.
Aye.
Chair Brown.
Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Thank you very much. Next, we'll open a public hearing on the Quality Education Commission and invite Mr. Larry Wolf to come forward.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Larry Wolf. I'm presently serving as president of the Oregon Education Association. The 4 years previous to that, I was vice president of the Oregon Education Association, had the opportunity to serve on the best practices panel, and that was a great experience and a learning experience for me as well. Before that, I served 23 years as a 7th and 8th grade science teacher in the Dalles, and I think that's one of the experiences I think that really is useful in this position. I see myself on serving on this committee basically as a conduit between myself and our members and the issues that the Quality Ed Commission deal with. So also I think I bring a perspective not only as a practitioner but also as someone that has a lot of statewide experience in these kind of issues.
Thank you. Mr. Wolf, this commission, while I think it's been fairly effective, has become a bit of a political football for the Oregon legislature. What would you do in your role as a commission member to restore credibility or take the politics out of this commission process?
That's a great question, Jim. I think the politics, basically what I see is the fact that what the Quality Ed Commission does and what the Quality Ed model does, it's more than just simply a funding model, and I think that's where the politics have come in around the funding model. It's more than that. It's actually a model that talks about what is a quality education, what are the pieces of a quality education. I think we need to frame the discussion around that, and I think that's one way we can hopefully bring this to a different political perspective, but also I think that one of the things about the quality ed model that we have is that other states are interested in it. And I know I serve on a committee of state presidents around the country, and they are always asking me about our quality education model, what is it, and so I send copies to them. And it's more than just a funding model, and I think that's what we need to talk about, that this is, we're talking about best practices, we're talking about what is a quality school and what are the components of it.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Wolf? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That we're going to close the public hearing. I'm going to do these all in and at the end in work sessions, if that's okay, if everybody else can hang on. Okay. Thank you. All right. Let's go back up to the top of the page. Employment Relations Board, open a public hearing on the appointment of Ms. Donna Sandoval Bennett, and welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, and
Senator
welcome.
Brown. Thank you. Just as a thumbnail sketch of my background, I am currently employed with the Department of Justice, where I am a senior assistant attorney general and the attorney in charge of the labor employment section. My professional background has included being a human resource manager for several years in the private sector. In that capacity, I received a presidential citation from President Reagan for exemplary efforts in human resource management and diversity training. I had a midlife crisis and went to law school.
I see that.
Which I don't advocate. And became an attorney, and in that capacity I was in the private sector for several years, representing management with regard to labor and employment issues. I was a human resource director of Crook County prior to joining the Department of Justice, where I have been for the last 2.5 years, and I have also been an adjunct law professor at Willamette Law School, teaching employment and labor law. These are the skills and experiences I can bring to the Employment Relations Board, and I believe that they provide a broad background and some unique experiences.
Thank you. Questions? Senator Johnson.
Thank you. I very much appreciated having the opportunity to talk with you on the telephone. We had a very candid conversation, and I appreciated your forthrightness. I'd had the opportunity in three previous sessions to hear the agency budget, and the agency has been troubled. Talk a little bit, if you would, about what you would intend to do as chair to help fix the issues that have plagued this board and to kind of restore the legislature's confidence in the board.
Well, I have heard from many sectors, both from labor and management, the issues that they perceive existing with the Employment Relations Board. I don't think that there has been anything said about the board to me that I have not experienced myself as a, if you will, recipient of the services they provide. there has been a lot of concern expressed with regard to budgets. Some of that was answered in this last budget. I understand that the board now has adequate equipment and staffing to get the job done. There's certainly a concern expressed, and it will be my top priority to evaluate the product that the board produces and the timeliness in which it produces it. That will be my primary focus going in.
Good. That's very reassuring. Timeliness has been one of the issues routinely raised through the hearings that we had in the budget committee that I served on, and timeliness, professionalism in the office, people at the appointed duty stations, that sort of issue. So I appreciate your very direct answer.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? You're off the hook.
Thank you very much.
Anybody else wishing to testify on this appointment to the Employment Relations Board? Okay, we're going to close the public hearing. I'm going to open a public hearing on the Workers' Compensation Management Labor Advisory Committee and invite Tracy Brill, Ellen Cutler, Linda Jefferson, and Gregory Miller.
Hi, how are you?
Very good.
I think you've had a baby since the last time I've seen you.
As a matter of fact, two.
Two, okay. One of them starting college. Ms. Brill, why don't you take it away? And we need to, can we pull the microphone over? There you go. Thank you.
Madam Chair and Senators, my name is Tracy Brill. I'm a firefighter with the Port of Portland and used to work under Mr. Chris Forage, but he has gone on to bigger and better things. I, in that capacity, have worked as the district representative for the International Association of Firefighters, and I come to this committee with labor background, and that would be the a direction that I would be going in providing information and support to this committee. I have spent the last 10 years as a firefighter, and in that 10 years, my labor involvement has included both management labor activities and contract negotiations, as well as a resolution of grievances. And I'm a very strong advocate of the management labor process. Obviously, being an employee and being a labor person, I've seen a lot of workers' compensation claims from the employee's perspective, and I see that it's a collaborative process to work with management to develop a I could use all the vision statements from the Management Labor Advisory Committee and let you know that I've actually done my homework, but I won't do that. But to come up with a balanced collaborative process, and I feel a little awkward sitting here. I'm the one labor person sitting at this table, and but I think that it will be balanced, and that's what I bring to this committee.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Mrs. Cutler.
Madam Chair, I'm Ellen Cutler. I am Vice President at Harry and David in Medford. My current role is occupational health, safety, workers' compensation, and many other activities at Harry and David. Because of our retail stores at Harry and David, I have a lot of experience with a multi-state program. We have 140 stores in 30 different states, and I have a unique perspective in looking at all those systems. And I'm proud to say that I think Oregon is one of the best managed, delivering low cost to employers as well as higher benefits to our injured workers. My background is I started out as a claims examiner with Safe Corporation many years ago. And from there, I moved to a law firm that represented injured workers. So I've not only represented the insurer, but also injured workers and labor. From there, I moved on to the Sisters of Providence, and I built and managed an occupational health program from there. Currently, I'm in my my role now with occupational health, safety, workers' compensation and benefits, computer systems, and a variety of other tasks. I think I'd like to serve on this committee because I think I bring a wealth of skills and experience, and I think the Management Labor Committee is a collaborative culture, and it's an opportunity to bring a lot of wisdom to the legislature.
Thank you. Ms. Jefferson.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Linda Jefferson, and I'm the Workers' Compensation Manager for the City of Portland. And I am very much looking forward to the opportunity of working with the Management Labor Advisory Committee for the Workers' Compensation Program. I've been actively involved in legislative activities for the City of Portland for a number of years, and have worked with the current committee and the prior committee members as well. My background is, it's kind of funny. I started out working in Medicare when Medicare was first born, and now I'm getting close to becoming a beneficiary of it. But in the meantime, I have pretty much for the most part worked with employee relation issues, benefits, human resources. For the past 24 years, I've been involved in workers' compensation as a benefits administrator for private sector and, of course, currently in the public sector. We do have a self-insured, self-administered program at the City of Portland, so I'm very much involved in the day-to-day activities of what's involved in administering benefits to injured workers. And as I told Senator Nelson the other day, I also realized that any of us are just one accident away from being an injured worker, so I'm very sensitive to their side of the issue, too. I've worked with a number of labor management committees over the years, Kaiser Occupational Group many years ago, their benefits committee. Also worked with the on the board of the Oregon Coalition of Healthcare Purchasers with Dr. Goldberg, and currently I co-chair the legislative committee of the Oregon Self-Insured Association. So I do bring, I hope, to the discussions a common sense and a realistic perspective on what's involved in workers' comp administration in the state of Oregon and the delivery of those benefits. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Miller. By process of elimination, I can get that out.
Correct. Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, Senator Johnson, it's a pleasure and an honor to be here today. My name is Greg Miller. I manage health services at a company called Gunderson in Portland. We're a heavy manufacturing company, probably fabricate more steel in the state than any other company, making barges, railroad freight cars. We have about 1,200 employees in Portland and 5,000 around the world. I've had a background in Oregon many years, and specifically in workers' comp case management the last 17 or 18 years. I grew up in Clatskanie in Senator Johnson's district, went to Eastern Oregon State University, Senator Nelson's area, so I think I've been around all. You guys know where I'm from. Did get sidetracked, somebody said, to another state in California 6 years in my career where I, after graduating from college, worked in physical therapy doing return-to-work programs for injured workers down there. And I have to tell you that we have a leg up and have for 15 years on workers' comp and real benefits to employees without really crippling employers' budgets. And I really came home and realized that, and now I'm working for Gunderson and have since 1997. But I'm kind of in the trenches. I've been on the site working with employers as a return-to-work coordinator, managing a nurse's station, the front lines of first aid and care for employees and getting them to the right professionals in the medical community in Portland and getting them back to work as quickly as possible. And our philosophy, we have a very aggressive return-to-work program, have an extensive EIP, employer and injury program funds through the state reimbursements. And bottom line is the best place for people to be is working and matching them to work safely so that they don't, if they do have an injury, they get back to the regular job as quickly and fast as possible and continue to support their families in the state. So we really believe in keeping our workforce together, working, matching them, and moving forward with a good system that's been in place for 15 years. So I'm here to help with these people to keep it going and tweak it where we need to, but make good recommendations as needed. Thank you.
Thank you. As opposed to a question, I more have a couple of comments this time around. I've really struggled with this particular committee because I saw it as sort of usurping our role as a legislature in terms of what would happen is either legislative leadership or, frankly, executive branch would defer to this committee in terms of whether we move forward or stop legislation. And I guess I feel a little differently now that I'm in leadership, and I'm very grateful you're willing to sort of wrestle these issues and take a collaborative approach. I think it's fair to say over the last several years we've moved away from adequately taking care of injured workers. I think we did some things to remedy that this legislative session. I hope we continue to work in that direction, but I also see your role as very much preventative in nature and working to make sure we prevent workplace injuries, and I think you've got other folks to take care of you on the rest of the committee, so I think you're well. I believe it's adequate representation from both sides, so I think you're in good shape. Any other questions or comments? Thank you. We really appreciate you traveling to join us today, and good luck with your kiddos.
Thanks.
Two? Both girls? Both boys?
One 13-month-old and one 5-week-old.
Oh! Congratulations.
Yes. Thank you very much. You have a good afternoon.
Thanks. Good luck to you.
All right.
We'll close the public hearing on Management Labor Advisory Committee. Open a public hearing on the State Plumbing Board. And my understanding, James has got the phone. We lose all our fan club now. Now it's going to be really dry because we're going to be on the phone.
Yes.
It's fine. Go take a break. It's fine.
We lost everybody.
Did you lose? Did you get here? We did lose everybody. It's going to be really hard. Thank you for coming. Hi.
Wait, we're still in a meeting.
Oh, my gosh. Great to see you. I just started. I think, are we? Let's go. Let's go. We're on.
We're on.
We've got somebody. Okay.
Mr. Gray?
Yes.
Oh, hi. We'll be the sec. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for letting me do this with via telephone.
No problem. We had a huge fan club in the room, and we're losing all of our fans, so it just certainly made the hearings a much more lively process. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and why you'd like to serve on the State Plumbing Board?
Okay. Well, my history comes from being in the plumbing industry for over 25 years. Presently, I'm employed by and a principal at Interface Engineering in Portland, and I lead the plumbing design for the corporation. The reason why I want to be on the board is I'm a member of the I'm a board member for the Tri-County Interpretation Board,
mm-hmm.
and I was a state plumbing board interpretations committee member, and I just have a lot of want to be part of what forms the plumbing industry in the future,
mm-hmm.
and I had some mentors that taught me to be involved and to help our industry grow, change, and many things change nowadays. So that's really basically my reason why.
All right. Didn't also you talk in your interest form about water conservation and in new buildings?
Yeah, my company, you've all heard of LEED?
Yes, I have. Has Senator Nelson, it's a building designation.
Yeah, it's
okay.
The U.S. Green Building Council.
Yes, yes.
And I've been involved in many projects here in the city on getting LEED certification from LEED Silver to LEED Certified, and work on many of those projects to where we've developed rainwater harvesting systems. I have an active one at PSU, Epler Hall. Station Place is three towers downtown Portland where they're flushing toilets with rainwater. So I have a real heavy interest in conservation of our good Bull Run water.
Okay, great. What's my other question? Where are you on waterless urinals?
Where am I on waterless urinals? Waterless urinals are kind of a cat that challenges the plumbing thinking and being a licensed plumber and the theory of plumbing systems and such. And I've heard some good about them. I've heard some bad about them. And I've gone around and seen what the parks had. I've gone to a couple of the state parks that have them and seen. And but as far as what I think about them, I'm on the fence about them because of the maintenance factor and how well they're taken care of. So I'm a little bit on the fence, and what's the maintenance for these fixtures, and how are they going to be taken care of, and are they going to be kept up to snuff so we don't have odor problems and such?
Kept up to snuff, that was a pun. All right.
So it wasn't meant to be a pun, but it was just meant to keep them up to the maintenance. You know, I've worked with some very green architects out of Seattle, and they've really tried to push these on PSU Effort Hall. But I said, you know, the state of Oregon has a moratorium. And during that time that we were designing and building PSU, they did remove them from their office because they were plugging their pipes. So that's another thing about them that I'm a little on the fence about.
Okay. Sarah Nelson.
That sounds good.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Gray. Do you have anything further for us?
Well, I hope that you vote in my favor and I can go work towards these endeavors and help the state of Oregon have some of the best plumbing codes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. All right. I think we need to go to Teresa Flowers. Oh, I'm going to let James do it. Okay. So we're going to close the public hearing on the State Plumbing Board. Note that we were officially in subcommittee. We now have a full quorum, and we're opening the public hearing on the Home Care Commission, and James is going to get a hold of Teresa Flowers. I'm just going to say this for the record while we're waiting for Ms. Flowers, but this group of applicants has been extremely impressive in terms of their breadth and experience, their diversity in terms of representing the geographic portions of the state, and also in terms of multiculturally. So way to go, Governor, and way to go, Nancy Goss, Duran. So.
And, Madam Chair, their willingness to call.
Yes.
I've spoken with a number of these folks. They made the effort to connect, and it's been great.
Great. Hello, Ms. Flowers?
Yeah.
Hi, it's Kate Brown.
Oh, yes, Kate.
Welcome to your Senate Rules Committee. We have a couple of senators here, Senator Betsy Johnson from Northwest Oregon, and Senator Dave Nelson from Northeast Oregon, and I have Portland. So you've got us today. We just want to hear a little bit about yourself and why you'd like to serve on the Home Care Commission, and we're very pleased you're willing to participate in this particular commission.
Yeah. Well, I was on the commission team with Elders in Action, and we overseen the budgets and things for ADS.
Uh-huh.
And I was with them for about 8 years, and I also I'm with DSAC on the advisory board for disabilities, and I am an RN, and I was injured in 1975, so I have a disability, and I use a scooter most of the time to do my walking. I am very limited in my walking ability, and I just feel as if I wanted to be on the on the commission so that I could be looking into making sure that the home care, the people at the clients have good home care. And so this is why I would like to be on.
Great. Any questions for Ms. Flowers?
No.
Senator Nelson has none. Senator Johnson?
I have none.
She has none. We appreciate your willingness to join us today by phone. And the governor's office will keep you apprised with regards to the status of your appointment.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate it. Have a good weekend.
Thank you. You too.
Okay.
It sounds like we're going to have a nice sunny one.
Yeah, it's beautiful here.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, James.
David Crumbine.
Okay, we're going to the Fair Dismissal Appeals Board, David Crombine. I'm sorry, you guys, I didn't see the little kid here earlier. I would have gotten her up and out of here, but Ms. Springer was the other person that we heard.
Crombine's a penalty, too. Did you know that?
No.
There are two penalty boards on this.
That's pretty good.
All right.
Overrepresentation of those Pendletonians.
I was just worried about that.
Dr. McGee, he could hardly like. He had letters from Greg Walden. He's over on. Okay. Hello?
Hello?
Mr. Crombine?
Yes, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm fine.
I'm Kate Brown, chair of the committee. I got to my right. I've got Senator Dave Nelson from an area you're familiar with, Pendleton.
Oh, yes.
And then to my left, I've got Senator Betsy Johnson from Northwest Oregon. And we just want to hear a little bit about yourself and why you want to serve on this particularly difficult, tough board.
Now, when I talked to somebody, they said it wasn't that tough. Apparently, I must have been misled. Huh?
Probably.
Well, I've got experience on various boards and whatnot. I've been on the Pendleton Local School Board for 6 years now.
Okay.
And so I have some understanding of how the system operates. And I've been to several sessions with the TSPC, and so I understand the licensing process fairly well. But, you know, as far as serving on a tough board, I've been on boards and had to make tough decisions, so it doesn't, you know, those kinds of things. You weigh the facts, you look at what the rules are, and you make your decisions based on that. You know, that's the basis I work with. So I've been on, I've been the county surveyor here, and Umatilla County is one of the other hats I have. And so, you know, you just have to make some tough decisions sometimes.
Okay.
So I don't really feel that it's going to be that difficult. The lady I talked to that talked me into running to putting my name in said you met 3 or 4 times per year at the most on these things. So I don't think it's a terrible time burden from that standpoint.
And you're currently, excuse me, currently instructor at Blue Mountain Community College?
Yes, I teach full-time in the Sylvan Flynn Engineering Technology Program.
Holy smokes, you've got like a lot of jobs, different hats you're wearing.
Yeah, I keep busy.
Okay. All right, other questions? Senator Nelson.
I just did the engineering or approval on my son's straw bale house. Which is quite interesting.
A straw bale house.
Yes, thank you.
Well, it's part straw bale and it's part a concrete block thing that looks like a Lego set.
I assume that the straw bales is used for insulation.
Well, actually, it's partially structural.
Really?
If you ever get up here to Pendleton to visit your associate, it'd be interesting to come look at it. It's quite a process.
He never invites me.
I'm sorry.
I'm teasing. I've had multiple invites.
I thought it was because the pay was so poor his children were reduced to living in yurts made out of straw.
Yeah, <it's> true.
But but I've been an instructor here for 20 years at the college, and I do a little bit like the county surveyor. I teach surveying as part of the classes, so I took on the county surveyor, which is extremely part-time job with the county, but it keeps me active in the field, and the same thing with working on small buildings and houses. I teach the structural sequence also through our program, so it keeps me active in the field, and that's what I like to do, because if I'm teaching, I should be active and keep current with codes and everything else.
That's great. Well, we really appreciate your willingness to spend time on this particular board, and do you have any questions for us?
No.
Okay.
I'm fine, and I've talked to Debbie about, I can't remember her last name, she called, and they're having a meeting Monday that I'm going to try to get to, but I'm not absolutely certain I'll be there.
Okay, good.
All righty.
Thank you,
David.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your time.
You bet.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Okay. Physical therapist, licensing board, Stephen Allstott. There's a lot of bodies we had today.
Mm-hmm.
It's the building.
Is it? But usually not the many. I mean, usually people don't bring their family. I mean, there's a lot of family that came and friends, and it's really neat. Okay, James, do you need some help? Mr. Allstadt?
Yes.
Hi, Kate Brand.
Hi.
I have to my left Senator Betsy Johnson from Northwest Oregon, and to my right, Senator Dave Nelson, Northeast Oregon. Just wanted to say hello and have you tell us a little bit about why you want to serve on this particular board and your background that makes you appropriate for it.
That's great. I appreciate you calling. I live in Portland, and I'm a physical therapist. I currently am a business owner in private practice in the Portland area. And I think the main reason I'd like to be appointed is just gives me an opportunity to give back to my profession. And I'm also interested in, you know, serving the public. And I think I can represent our profession well in that regard. I have 18 years experience as a physical therapist. I've been active in our professional organization. I'm currently a member of the Government Affairs Committee. I have a good knowledge of the laws and statutes from that experience, and I understand a lot of the issues that affect our profession. I think being a business owner, you know, I hire a therapist, so I have a direct impact there, and have a desire just to serve the public and be connected to the physical therapy profession.
Great questions?
No, those are great reasons.
You blew everyone away. You're off the hook for any questions.
Okay, great.
Thank you very much. We really appreciate your willingness to serve on this board.
All right, thank you. I appreciate you calling.
Take care.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, Residential Structures Board, Douglas Leithan? Leithan?
You have to figure out how to pronounce all these names.
Yeah. Oh, I thought Mila. It's Mila, right? Mila? I think it's Mila.
Mila, yep.
I probably said it right the first time. No.
Kate, are we going to do all of these ones that are...
I'll open one public hearing and waive it and see if anybody wants to testify. So we should be done here shortly, and then we need to move all these appointments, too. I know. I just want to be done. I have to stay down. Our speaking engagement at 7.
Who are you speaking to?
Emily Bliss. So. I think cocktails at 5, so still.
Well, drink for 2 hours and then give a speech. That's good.
All right. Hello.
Hello, this is Doug Lathine.
Hi, Doug Lathine. Thank you for pronouncing your name first. We have a phonetic spelling, but it's still not easy. I'm Kate Brown. Welcome to your Senate Rules Committee. On my left is Senator Betsy Johnson from Northwest Oregon. And on my right is Senator Dave Nelson from Northeast Oregon. And we just wanted you to tell us a little bit about yourself and why you would like to serve on the Residential Structures Board.
Certainly. I'm a Salem resident, been living in Salem about all my life. I run a company called C&R Builders. We're remodelers. The company's been doing business in Salem since 1961. I have owned the company for 15 years. Prior to that, I managed a lumberyard hardware store, a family business, and I've been a president of the local chapter of the Oregon Remodelers Association. And, of course, my interest is in representing remodelers in the process. And I have experience with the subcommittee of the Building Codes Division reviewing the International Residential Code previously.
Mr. Lathine, you would be the only remodeler on this particular board, as I recall. Is that correct?
That's correct, Kate.
Okay. I think that's critically important to include
that aspect of the industry. Other questions for Mr. Lathine?
Nope.
Sarah Johnson.
One, and I'm not quite sure that it's within the purview of this board, but the issue of consumer complaints and consumer issues, I need to be reminded by staff to what degree this board would deal with those issues, and I just wanted to hear briefly Mr. Lathine's sort of general attitude about licensure of contractors and how to resolve some of these disputes that occur between customers and contractors, be they remodelers or start from scratch construction firms. But this may be so far out of the purview of this board that I'm asking the wrong question of the wrong person.
Mm-hmm. Well, that I believe is a function primarily of the CCB, Construction Contractors Board, as far as the licensing. If you'd like me to address my philosophy, I could do that as far as consumers. But
I'd like that very much if you don't mind. Thank you for helping clarify my misunderstanding.
Certainly. And the CCB and the BCB are both under the umbrella of the Consumer Business Division, I believe is what it's called.
Mm-hmm.
The remodelers are not necessarily, I think they rate as far as on the consumer radar about, they're even below used car salesmen.
Below legislators?
I don't know. Well, that's a different sector. So.
Very diplomatic.
because we're involved in associations, we believe strongly in education, and licensing is critical. I believe that as far as the business, it's very easy to get into contracting, which I'm an advocate for because I think it's good to help people start. But I also believe there's got to be the consumer education for the consumer, but the contractors need to police themselves as much as government. So it's our responsibility as remodelers to advocate for strong associations that educate the contractors out there.
Thank you.
I've seen too many problems in the industry to be silent on the subject.
Thank you very much. That was a thoughtful answer, and thank you for helping get me straight on who oversees what.
Do you do any of your remodeling with what is it? Hay bales?
We've looked at some of those projects, but no, we haven't tackled those.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Lathine. Do you have any questions for us?
Thank you for your service. We really appreciate what you folks are doing.
Thank you.
No questions, but thank you so much.
Thank you for your willingness to serve on this particular board. We look forward to working with you, and the governor's office will be in touch regarding the status of your appointment.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay.
That guy's great. He's funny. He's diplomatic.
He's and he lives in Salem, and so why isn't he here? Oh, okay.
That's a good guy.
Let's go to the Oregon State Veterinary Medical Examining Board. We have Drs. Connell, and one of them's a doctor and one of them's not. One of them has horses. Mr. Reed, I think. So, James.
Is it fair to ask them if they'd let Schrader work on their animals?
Yes, I think. Anything is open, fair game.
We have some issues with the animal.
Are we on? Oh, no. Okay. I'll tell you off the record. First one is the veterinarian. Are we going to Dr. McConnell?
We're doing both of them at the same time.
Oh.
So we can just.
That's a great. Okay.
High technology.
Hey. That I could not do. You're right. I could not do that. We have one more, and then we are done after that.
Then you have to make motions.
We have to make motions, but I can do that really quickly.
So are you planning to do individual motions for these?
I think I have to, and then we can move to...
And then you can do this giant one.
Right,
as well.
Yes.
Okay.
Don't you think?
I think that's better.
Okay, I do too.
Cleaner. And then carriers?
I think I'm going to give them... Do you have a preference for which one you care?
Okay.
You
have both of them?
We have both of them? All right. Okay, folks. Hi. Kate Brown, how are you?
Yes, I'm fine.
Is this Dr. McConnell?
Yes, it is.
And do we have Mr. Mark Reed on as well?
Yes, you do.
Okay. You guys sound alike, so...
Uh-oh.
at least on the phone. So I guess what we'd like, just so you know, your testimony is being taped. We've got Senator Dave Nelson from the Northeast Oregon area, and Senator Johnson from Northwest Oregon, and yours truly from the Portland-Milwaukee area.
Okay.
So we would just like to hear, you need to state your names for the record and tell us a little bit about your background and why you'd like to serve on this particular board.
Okay, who would you like to go first?
Doesn't matter.
Go ahead, Mark. All right, thank you.
Mark.
My name is Mark McConnell, and I live in Eugene. I am currently chief of staff at the Springfield Eugene Emergency Veterinary Hospital. I have held this position for over 12 years. I'm quite eager to serve on the Veterinary Medical Examining Board. This profession has been very generous to me, and now it is time for me to give back to the profession and the community. As far as I know, I'd be the first veterinarian with a background in emergency medicine to sit on the board, and thus bring a slightly new perspective to the board.
Mm-hmm.
And lastly, the veterinary profession is evolving rapidly, and there are many topics, challenges, and pressures facing our profession over the next several years, and I'd like to be involved in making sure some of these issues are addressed in an effective manner that will inform, educate, and protect both the public and the profession.
Just trying to think, the last time an emergency physician went on a... got involved in politics, he became governor, so maybe that will be your path, too.
You never know.
Mr. Reed.
Yes, well, my name is Mark Reed. It's difficult that we have two Marks on the board.
Yes.
We'll work that out. And I am would be nominated as a public member, and I live on a small farm in Clackamas County with my wife, and let's see, it's 11 cats, 4 dogs, 3 horses, 3 ponies, 2 pygmy goats, 7 sheep, 6 chickens, and a turkey.
And a very patient wife.
Yeah, well, actually, we're both very much into the animals, and we're really dependent on quality veterinary care, and so that's one of the reasons this position appeals to me. My actual employment is I work as the operations director up at the World Forest Center by the zoo.
Lucky you.
Yeah, I've been there for 25 years, and it's both an administrative position and also a working position as far as technical support for all the equipment there. And I really am committed to really high standards for veterinarians and fair resolutions of any issues that come to the board. I believe that I can bring both good judgment and administrative skills to the board, and I promise to make my work for the board a very high priority in my life. I'm a lifelong Oregonian and really look forward to serving my state in this way.
Mr. Reed, question for you. What kind of horses do you have? And when you were doing endurance, are you talking like 100-miler stuff?
Okay. We have 3 Arabian horses, and my wife was actually more into the endurance. I was her pit crew, and she did up to 60 miles. I got into it, and I did some 25s and 30s at 150 and decided it was kind of a long trail ride. So I do mostly trail riding now around my home here.
I had a great aunt who did endurance riding, and I've got her 100-mile bracelet.
Yes.
So she also did dressage, and that's what I do. So
okay, well, I started out in dressage and still have a basic love for that. It's the best basic way to get started with horses.
I totally agree. Other questions? Senator Johnson.
No, I just find it very attractive that in the credentials that both of these two gentlemen submitted, giving back to their profession was their lead reason for wanting to serve. And I can't think of a higher calling to a board, giving back to the community or giving back to the profession. And I was just touched that that was the principal reason both of them gave for wanting to participate.
And, Mr. Reed, you don't use Senator Schrader as your vet, do you?
I used to a long time ago, and he seemed to be more working for the state, and so we're using some different veterinarians now. But I think he's an excellent veterinarian.
Well, Dr. McConnell, that's your advice to not run for the legislature. All right. Senator Nelson, any questions? We really do thank both of you. As an animal person, I just really appreciate your willingness to serve on this critical committee, and I would certainly agree with you that it's a critical area, particularly in the emergency arena. I can't remember, it was what, 3 weeks ago, my dog started throwing up the pieces of the garbage that she had eaten the day before, so I was very critically aware of the need for emergency services, so thank you.
It always happens late on a Saturday evening.
Yep, right.
Absolutely.
My husband didn't tell me, but he had left the garbage out on his way. He was going to take it out of the trash, but he left it in the kitchen, and my dog promptly consumed all of it. So it was lovely. All right. Well, thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, wow. All right.
You know, it always is that the emergency occurs on Saturday night.
It is.
One of my dummies mixed it up with a raccoon Saturday night. Bit right here.
What kind of extent?
A cat went out and took on a raccoon and got bitten bad enough that we had a little trip into the emergency vet.
Did you have to go to Dove Lewis?
Yeah, no, we started into Dove Lewis, and the cat was screaming so loud that I called my vet and begged him to come down.
Dove Lewis is...
No. All right. Last but not least, James, in terms of hearings, Oregon Commission for Voluntary Action and Service, and we have Rose Mignano.
Yeah. I feel a little badly if I shouldn't have been asked the question. I'm sure.
All right. So let's go through. You want to highlight for me what we haven't done? We've done this already. Okay. Oh, we're ready?
Yes. Hello, Ms. Mignano.
Hello.
Hi, this is Kate Brown. I'm the chair of the Rules Committee. Welcome to your Senate Rules Committee. Got two legislators sitting here, one on my left, Senator Betsy Johnson from the entire Northwest Oregon area, and to my right, Senator Dave Nelson from the Northeast Oregon area. So welcome. Would you tell us a little bit about yourself and why you'd like to serve on this particular board?
Sure, yeah. Sorry, you'll have to... forgive my voice, I'm recovering from a cold. But I'm in Lincoln City, Oregon at Taft High School. I'm a second year AmeriCorps member there. And it happens to be the same high school that I went to and graduated from.
Wow.
Yeah, and it was just kind of a fun experience. And last year I was their volunteer coordinator setting up various volunteer programs.
Great.
Is this an okay connection?
Yep, you're fine.
Okay. And this year I'm helping them as a volunteer coordinator again, but this time doing a program called COACH, which is career exploration and looking at both high school options using volunteers to help mentor students.
Great.
And so really why I wanted to join the commission is to get more involved in service work on a political level and statewide level. Because AmeriCorps has really changed my life, and so I just want to make sure that programs like AmeriCorps will continue to keep growing.
Great. Any questions for this witness?
Sounds like it's a good cause.
Senator Johnson?
Nope.
I think you're off the hook on this one.
All right, I lucked out.
I assume, is it bright and sunny over on the coast today?
Let's look out the window. In fact, it is. Is it rainy over there? Then
No. It's gorgeous today. So
good.
Well, thank you very much for your willingness to serve on this particular commission, and we appreciate your willingness to serve the state of Oregon. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right. I'm going to do these individually, and I'll just do them myself. We'll go quicker that way, and then we'll do in block the ones we waive. Is that okay with everyone? All right. Okay. Chair's going to open a work session on the Employment Relations Board and move the appointment of Donna Sandoval Bennett to the Employment Relations Board. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. We can have Senator Nelson carry that one. I'm going to move the... Open the work session on the Oregon Criminal Justice Commission. Move the appointment of Chief Willie Grace to the Criminal Justice Commission. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Open a work session on the Fair Dismissal Appeals Board. Move the appointments of David Crumbine and Sherry Springer. Any objection? Any discussion? Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing, seeing none? So ordered. Going to open a work session on the Home Care Commission and the appointment of Teresa Flowers. Chair would move the appointment of Teresa Flowers to the Home Care Commission. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Open a work session on the Physical Therapist Licensing Board. Chair would move the appointment of Stephen Alstott. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Chair would open a work session on the State Plumbing Board. Move the appointment of Jonathan Gray. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Chair would open a work session on the Quality Education Commission. Move the appointment of Larry Wolf. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Chair would open a work session on Residential Structures Board. Move the appointment of Doug Lethine. Any discussion? Other than we really enjoyed him. Any objection? So ordered. Chair would open a work session, the Oregon State Veterinary Medical Examining Board. Move the appointments of Mark McConnell and Mark Greed. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Chair would open a work session on the Oregon Commission for Voluntary Action and Service and move the appointment of Rose Mignano. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Chair would open a work session on the Workers' Compensation Management Labor Advisory Committee. Move the appointments of Tracy Bill and Tracy Brill, Ellen Cutler, Linda Jefferson, and Gregory Miller. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Okay, we're going to move the appointment, the following appointments that we've waived appearances. The Oregon Board of Accountancy, Jens Anderson, Kent Bailey, Raymond Johnson, Stu Morris. State Aviation Board, John Lowacker.
Great guy.
Okay, good. Commission for the Blind, Deborah Marinos. Board of Boiler Rules, Robert Cowling. Building Code Structures Board, Martin Brown, Chris Davis. State Commission on Children and Families, Anita Deckert, Samuel Henry, Thurman Merritt. Columbia River Gorge Commission, Doug Crow. Electrical and Elevator Board, James Johnston, Tim Nickel. Fair Dismissals Appeals Board, Afonso Lopez Vasquez. Governing Board of the Department of Geology and Mineral Studies, William Elliott, Don Hagenson, Barbara Seymour. Commission on Hispanic Affairs, Francisca Johnson Leva. State Housing Council, Larry Mettinger. Oregon State Lottery Commission, Carrie Timchuk. Mechanical Board, James Culbertson, Bradley Wright. Physical Therapist Licensing Board, Diva Benitez. Residential Structures Board, Catherine Gray. Trust for Cultural Development, Kathleen Curtis Cosgrove, John Hampton, Charles Walker, Marilyn Warricks. Oregon State Veterinary Medical Examining Board, Leanne Peelstick. Oregon Commission for Voluntary Action and Service, Elizabeth Hakala. Commission for Women, Cheryl Thompson Dash. And the Workers' Compensation Management Labor Advisory Committee, Lon Holston, John Kilpatrick, Michael Rourke, Bob Shiprack, Sherry Sundstrom, Lisa Trussell. Let the record reflect that there was no one in the audience but for Nancy Gosserand and no one wishing to testify on the appearances that we waived. That was the motion. Any discussion? Any objection to the motion? So ordered. Okay, we're going to have Senator Nelson carry Donna Sandoval Bennett. I'm going to have Senator Ferrioli carry Dr. Bruce Goldberg, which is a change from earlier. And I'm going to have Senator Johnson carry. Can we do them all in block?
I think you move each one separately. So
okay.
You have to do each one separately.
Okay.
I think we
already did.
Judy.
Okay. All right. I'm going to appoint Senator Johnson to carry all of the rest in hopes that we can move them in block.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Anything else to come before the committee? Thank you all very much. We appreciate your patience, your willingness to stay. I, again, thought this was a most excellent group of representatives of the state. So.
I guess it's John Hampton's. Talk on the cultural thing, there's this piece of man saying how structurally important that is for our society, so good arts. And, sometimes pretty insightful.
Very true. All right. Anything else? We're adjourned. Thank you all very much.